Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 159, recorded on August 8th, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going pretty dang fine. And how is it going for you, Michael?
Pretty dang fine as well.
Awesome.
Yep. I spent the day at Six Flags yesterday, so I'm recovering.
Nice.
Yeah. So a little
sleep. You still have your iPhone?
I did. Yeah. Okay. So that's Adam Christensen from the MacCast. And I was at the end of the day, I'm walking out and I announced, I'm very happy. I have all of my things still. And there were a few times where I made sure I stuck stuff in certain pockets that were totally secure. I ended up sitting on my iPhone on several rides because I figured I could situate it in a way that I wasn't like crushing it with my butt. Because those were the only pockets I had that actually had little buttons on them so I could keep it closed and it wouldn't fly out in any circumstance. So,
speaking of crushing eye devices,
yeah.
Oh,
what happened?
You didn't hear about. You didn't obviously see my tweets from yesterday. Yeah. So, I was working all day, and I decided I'm going to go get a coffee at the coffee shop and get out from behind the computer screen for a few minutes and. I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I'll take the iPad and I'll do a little research and I'll take my iPhone. You know, I never leave the house without my iPhone. So I got them both in my hands. I walk out, open the garage door, and it had been trash day the day before. So I'm like, oh, the trash cans need to come in. I'll just put those in so I don't have to do it when I get home. And I put my iPad and my iPhone on my car, on top of my car.
Mm-hmm.
And then proceeded to put the trash away and go to the coffee shop.
Uh-oh.
And yeah.
Oh, God.
Yes, I got to the coffee shop.
Oh, God, no.
And looked over at the seat next to me and going, hey, you know, my iPad and my iPhone aren't there. Oh, you know, fiddlesticks.
Yeah, that's
because
not what
you said.
Because
that's exactly what I would say, too.
Yeah, I know Jeff would.
Dang it all to heck. Fiddlesticks.
Yeah, and so I'm like racing back as fast as I can. And I hadn't gone that far, but it's probably about 5 minutes each way. So 10 minute total. And I'm watching the other side of the road the whole time thinking, okay, it either fell off when I backed out of the driveway, you know, and they're like at the end of my driveway, or worst case scenario, when you come out of, I kind of live on a cul-de-sac, and when you come out, you take a right. And I'm like, or worst case scenario, it fell off when I made the right onto a big major street. And of course, I get right to my street and there they are in the middle of the road in rush hour traffic.
Oh my goodness.
Cars going by at 60 miles an hour. And the iPad was like
a big bucket of sad for you.
Yeah, the iPad was face down and the iPhone was kind of off to the side. So I flip around when it's safe, jump out, grab them both, jump back in the car, and the smart cover was kind of off bit too, so they were all three separate pieces. Grab them all up, and it was the iPad got the worst of it. I'm pretty sure it was run over maybe multiple times. There's all these. It was a beautiful. There's a photo on my Twitter. These beautiful little spider.
Oh yeah,
cracks like all over the glass, and big chunks missing around the. front facing camera destroyed. The right hand side of the back case had a giant dent in it. It looked like it had been potentially drugged a couple times.
Oof.
And the amazing thing,
still works.
It's still turned on. Yeah. The right side of the screen where the back was dented was like darkened, but it wasn't, I mean, it was visible and, you know, had the glass not been totally destroyed, usable. The camera didn't work.
Both front and back? Front and back?
Well, I think there must be a sensor because when I tried to launch the camera app, it just hung on the, you know, the iris never opened up. So I'm guessing because it couldn't recognize the front camera that it just wouldn't even launch the photo app. So I don't know. I'm just guessing. Seemed that way because the back camera looked like it would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so I posted on Twitter and of course immediately everybody's like, you got Apple Care Plus, right?
No, why would you? Who's you're not that irresponsible.
I did not have Apple Care Plus. And I found out that I was actually vindicated and validated. Oh, and the iPhone, for anybody who's wondering, came out almost unscathed. Just the back glass was a little bit cracked.
That's good.
So I took that to the Apple store. Apple replaced that for $29, which was awesome.
The back case?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't know they did that. I have a friend who has a shattered back cover in her iPhone. Maybe I should have her go to the Apple store.
Yeah, $29 installed out the door in 5 minutes.
What about if you accidentally got some like melted chocolate up in your speaker also? Would they do anything for you then?
No. Well, okay, so here's the deal. So here's the deal on it. So Apple Care Plus, right? You get 2 years and you get 2 incidents of accidental damage and it's $50 and they replace $50 US, they replace your device. Which is a pretty good deal if you're a person who might drop their device a lot. You know, if you're the type of person you think you're going to break it, then you might seriously consider it. For me, I did the calculations, and yeah, you can't. Apple Care Plus has not been available since I've been buying iOS devices, but in my lifetime, I've owned 9 separate iOS devices. And this is the first time I've ever damaged one accidentally like this. So had I bought Apple Care Plus on every single one of those, if it was available, you're looking at $900. As it were, people had tweeted, you know, I went to the Apple store and they just replaced mine and I knew they weren't going to replace it, right? But I figured I'll make the Genius Bar appointment. I'll see what they say. Maybe there's a cheaper replacement cost, you know, like maybe I don't have to pay because it was a 64 gig model. So it's, you know, $699 is the retail price. So I made the Genius Bar appointment. I went in there and I put the smart cover on and the girl comes over and says, "Wow, so what's wrong with the iPad?" And I said, "Well, the touch interface isn't really working very well."
Yeah.
And so I think that broke the ice. She got a chuckle out of that. And it turns out that Apple has on iOS devices, iPhones and iPads, and I would assume iPod touches, something called the out of warranty coverage OWC policy. And it's actually on Apple's website if you go look at the details. And in essence, what you get is they will out of warranty replace an iPad, a new iPad for $299, an iPad 2 for $249, and an iPhone 4S for $199. And it doesn't matter which model. Now, they'll only do model for model. So if you bought a 16 gig iPad 2 Wi-Fi, they will only swap it out for a 16 gig.
Yeah,
new iPad Wi-Fi.
So you can't trade up.
You can't trade up, and it's the same price across the board. It's $299 regardless.
That's fair.
Yeah. So for $299, they just swapped it out. And so, you know, given that, and given the fact that had I bought Apple Care Plus, had I been able to buy Apple Care Plus, but just let's assume it's always been available, I would have paid a lot more to get to this point than I have now, just replacing, you know, paying the replacement cost. So it still seems to me, if you're the type of person who's not going to, who doesn't typically cause accidental damage to your devices, that you're better off still not getting the Apple Care Plus and just being covered under the out of warranty coverage that Apple offers on devices. But it's amazing to me that they even offer that. And like, she could have totally turned to me and said, "Nope, you know, $699, here's a new iPad if you want one."
Yeah.
But the fact that Apple does that, I think, is really nice. And I left there with a good experience. So within hours of this horrific event, I actually had a replacement iPad and my phone was fixed. And, you know, it was a good feeling, although the bad feeling being it was still a $329 lesson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to think that they set up some of these rules to the replacement plans and repair plans in a way so that they're designed to be flexible, so that you can go in there feeling like, oh man, I really screwed this up. They're probably not going to do anything for me, but we'll see. And you go in there and they say, you know, we're not really supposed to, but this time we'll do it for you because you seem like a good guy. And yep. that really leaves a tremendously good impression on someone.
Yeah, but in this case, it's standard policy. I mean, anybody gets this deal.
Even if you run over it with a car.
Yeah, even if you run over it with a car.
I mean, still, even in that case, you're talking about the replacement cost of what it would be otherwise. You're saying it would be a full replacement otherwise?
No.
Full cost.
I mean, that's apples. I expected that she could have said to me,
go buy another one.
That Apple, I did not expect Apple to have this policy. I guess this was coming down to, but this is standard policy. It's on Apple's website. You can look at the pricing, and it's just how they handle these things. So it's like you're an idiot.
Coverage. So I mean, I wonder how destroyed you can make these things, though.
Oh, as much as you want.
Considering
that's just
atoms, really destroyed.
Yeah, I guess it's like a. Like if you bring in $0.75 bill, they'll still give you.
They give you $75.
Exactly. Yeah, they're perforated like that.
I don't know. I didn't know that Apple had this policy.
I think that that's great. That's one of the reasons.
It's not special treatment. It's not any. It's not anything. It's just if you kill your iDevice, it's $199 for an iPhone 4S, $249 for an iPad 2, $299 for a replacement new iPad. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay full boat.
Yeah, that's great.
I guess because maybe they already made enough margin on the first sale, and they're still going to make a little bit on this one. I don't know what the component cost of an iPad is. And of course, they're giving you a refurbished one. So I'm sure some are more damaged than others. They probably salvage parts from the stuff that they take back when they can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm betting yours is not salvaged.
No, mine's not salvageable. But I mean, you could have someone who just, broke the glass and digitizer, and maybe the camera's fine, the motherboard's fine.
Yeah, probably a lot of drops where the glass just shatters. So that's very cool. That's a good story.
Yeah. Happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
More or less.
More or less.
Yeah.
All right. It's an awful day.
You have a working iPad.
That's a day from hell.
You have a working iPhone, and you didn't have to pay full price to get both replaced.
Yep.
That sounds like a pretty happy ending to me.
Mm-hmm.
In a family safe way.
Yeah, totally. All right. So moving on to iOS stuff. Hulu Plus is now available on Apple TV. Do we have to update for that?
Meh. Nope. It just shows up.
It just showed up.
And I'm like, nice move, Apple.
I think it's a good thing. You know, honestly, I'm not a... So you can, once it shows up on your Apple TV, you can go in there and you need to sign in with the subscription is managed by your Apple ID, your iTunes account. And you can go in there and get a 7-day free trial. So I went in and I did that. And of course, I think I watched a total of zero stuff on Hulu Plus.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't look at anything on Hulu Plus. So it's definitely not for me. But then again, there are a lot of people who watch a lot of Hulu. And I know a lot of people who have a Hulu Plus account already. Now, how does it work for people who already have a Hulu Plus account that have signed up outside of the App Store?
I'm assuming you just put your credentials in and it just knows you have an account and you go.
Okay, fair enough. Option to say I have
that would
an
make
account.
Sense.
I'll play with my Apple TV while we're talking about it.
I was more excited about the Amazon Prime stuff, frankly. I don't even know if it's in our notes or if we covered it yet.
No. What's going on with that?
There's an Amazon Prime app for Amazon Video app for the iPad now. So, if you have an Amazon Prime account, there's all kinds of free movies and TV shows you get access to through Amazon Prime for streaming. And it's always been computer only, but now it's on iOS. Although I haven't checked to see, and maybe you know, Jeff, if it supports AirPlay. I just watched on my iPad.
It does not support AirPlay.
So that's lame. But
yeah, that's a big bucket of crap is what that is.
But I don't really use AirPlay. I mostly am just watching stuff, you know, on my iPad screen. So it didn't really affect me.
I love AirPlay.
Yeah, AirPlay rocks. Well, so what I want, bringing AirPlay back into it, what I was going to ask you guys is there's a running theory, and maybe this was put forth on TMO even, I think. I can't remember if it was John or somebody that said it, but there was a running theory that maybe Hulu Plus came to the iPad came to the Apple TV because of AirPlay. Like with AirPlay mirroring and Snow Leopard, you can pretty much just do it now anyway. So they might as well make money off of it, you know, try and sign up more people with Apple TVs and not hold out anymore, because if you had Hulu Plus on your Mac, you could just send it over, right?
Well, heck, if you have Hulu at all, you can just do it. You don't need necessarily Hulu Plus. You get some ads, but I always thought it was a dumb idea that you couldn't still watch Hulu on your iPad, but just watch the ads as you could on your Mac.
Well,
whatever.
It's not about if you're seeing the ads on your Mac or sitting on your couch. Actually, it is. If I'm sitting at my Mac, first, I'm not going to be happy because I'm having to watch a movie while I'm sitting at my computer. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And
I don't like that either.
Yeah. And sitting at my computer and having ads forced on me at the same time in a show just really kind of pisses me off. But if I'm sitting on my couch, because I have years of being conditioned of sitting on a couch and having to deal with ads, I'm more tolerant of the forced ads there.
Definitely.
See, our house has become this strange place where we have all these TVs and they now never get turned on. Seriously. I mean, we're watching on our iOS devices and that's pretty much it.
You know, my television has gone from being a television to a widescreen display for my Apple TV and my TiVo streaming Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, had the Olympics not happened, I don't know. The TV might not have been on for months.
So you don't have an Apple TV that you plug into it?
I have an Apple TV. I have an original Apple TV that's plugged into the one set, and then I have an Apple TV 2. But no, I mostly watch directly on my iPad now. I'm working most of the time, and
no,
so the only time
you.
I watch TV is when I'm just getting ready to go to sleep. So I'll watch for like an hour, and it's just watch for an hour on the iPad and fall asleep. So
yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes it's just easier because it's some things you want to watch and you either have to turn the volume pretty far up to hear all the dialogue, or it's just easier to listen on headphones on your iPad.
Yeah, that is a big part of my, yeah. See, I need a better sound system. I guess if I had a better modern surround sound system for my home theater, I probably would use the,
you know,
more,
that makes a huge difference.
It does in this day and age. And I just have Dolby Pro Logic, which sucks.
Yeah, so. it really does make a big difference.
I'm living in 1985.
I have two big speakers. I don't know what it is, just big speakers. So, very interesting thing happened to a Wired reporter this week.
Oh.
And it's made me really paranoid. And I think most other people who have heard about this...
You weren't paranoid before?
Hey, you know that one, that app called 1Password? I never used it because I only have 1Password.
Oh, for the love of God and all that is holy, Michael.
And you don't have a backup, right?
Oh, I back up. I'm not stupid.
That would be crazy.
I'm not stupid. I have backups and I rotate my backups between my house and my mom's house.
That was a dig at the reporter.
Yeah, no, he didn't have a backup on this.
That was the stupidest part of the whole story. Yeah. I mean, forget the hacking.
All right,
yeah,
I'm
baffled. How could he not have backups?
Yeah, so what happened
is... I don't
want
to berate the guy, though. He's probably got it enough already. Well, I'm sorry.
I know.
I'm just going to apologize now in case he accidentally hears this.
Yeah, so Matt, if you're listening, I feel really, really bad about what happened to you.
Oh,
it won't stop me from bagging on the no backups thing for a little bit, but I'm doing it out of love.
Yeah,
definitely. Anything from Jeff is out of love. But so, and I think that ultimately it's good that it happened to him because he's shedding a lot of light on it. It's getting a lot of coverage. And it's definitely compelling a lot of people to rethink their security strategies. And okay, but so we should explain what happened.
Yeah, explain what happened, and then I'm going to explain to you why rethinking your digital security strategies is not going to help.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. You absolutely should do it.
Well, it'll help depending on what your current status is.
If you're Adam, I am so glad you're going to go down that path. I'm going to sit back with a big smile on my face. Okay. Take it away, guys.
Okay. So what happened was he was hanging around, what was it, Sunday? Whatever. Yeah, it was Sunday. And his iPhone went to the Apple screen, and he thought, oh, man, it just died. And he plugged it in. And then he went to his iPad. Oh no, he realized then his phone completely restarted and it was at the setup screen. And he thought, okay, weird, whatever. Then he went to his iPad and his iPad had done the same thing. And so then he went to his MacBook Air and it had a passcode prompt up and he couldn't figure out what it was and it remotely wiped that as well. So
all his devices were remotely wiped, and he didn't do it.
And he didn't do it. So then, because he had Find My iPhone turned on and all of those. So then, long story short, what he found out was a hacker got access to his iCloud account in order to ultimately gain access to his Twitter account, and in the meantime, erased all of his devices and changed all of his passwords. And also, I believe, dumped his Gmail, too. So he got access to iCloud, and then iCloud was the backup password. I forgot my password address.
Backup email address for Gmail.
Yep. So he got into Gmail and got into Twitter. And, so I believe that it was he did this through some social engineering by calling iCloud technical support. And they sent the password reset to a different email address, and that's how it kicked off.
So, but Amazon so
basically,
was involved
it was
in some
social
way too,
engineering.
Though, right?
Yeah, Amazon was involved because
one of the security questions is what's the last four of your credit card?
Right, and that's
so I think the hack started. Did the hack start at Amazon? Like they somehow got that information from Amazon?
Yeah, it started at Amazon. That's right. They needed his address and the last four of his credit card. And I'm not entirely clear on how he got that information from Amazon, but it had to do with wanting to add another credit card to their account or something like that. And well, I mean, just think about it. You always see the last four digits of your credit card number everywhere because you think, oh, it's secure. It's not the entire credit card number. But then again, that's also asked as security questions because you don't want to give someone your whole number of Social Security or credit card or anything like that. So it reduces a fairly long number to a four-digit number that is out there for everyone to look at. So, Adam?
Yep. So the point behind all this is this all happened because of human beings.
Right.
Yes.
And the ability to manipulate and influence humans, which is, in the grand scheme of things, relatively, when you're talking about hacking, it's much easier to hack a person than it is to hack a computer system.
Yeah.
And so the delta for all of this is us. And in the end, we're stupid and we can be manipulated. Mm-hmm. And we have empathy and we have sympathy and we have, you know, so you're at the mercy of a human being. And we all suffer from this. Most of us suffer from this. I mean, if you're not a psychopath or something like that, there is going to be something that someone can do to make you feel bad, feel sorry, feel, you know, and potentially bend rules or skirt the system, or because we've all been there, right? So someone who's smart and adept at doing this sort of attack, this sort of social engineering, and there's guys, hackers that study this religiously. I actually know a guy who does talks on this exact topic. And I've heard him talk about these sorts of things. And so you can implement all of the security you want from a digital standpoint. At the end of the day, it's much easier for me to make a phone call to a customer support representative or to go to a place or to go to, you know, a place where I know you're going to be, watch your social media stream, check the stuff that you do. I mean, one of the bits of information they need is an address, right? And I think the article that I read pointed out, well, a billing address can easily be figured out by a domain name registration and a Whois lookup. You know, if you didn't do the smart thing and protect that information, it's out there. Or simply looking it up in a phone book. And how do they find out where you're located? Well, they look at your Twitter and, oh, he's tweeting from this state most of the time and this city most of the time. Oh, well, let's just get the phone book for that city and look and see if there's this person's name in the phone book. Oh, look, there's the address. So, you know, we make this information available and you can start to close it down and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you might just get a phone call. Hey, we're collecting donations for blah, blah, blah. Can we send you a pamphlet?
Yeah.
Right? And you go, sure.
Well,
you don't know who's... And boom, they have that. So then they use that to call up Amazon or Apple and say, hey, I'm so-and-so. Here's my address. Oh, you know, that credit card, I had this horrible thing happen. I had to destroy it. I don't have the number anymore. I don't remember what it is. Can't you do anything? Please, oh, please, oh, please. And, you know, the rep that day feels bad for you and says, well, do you know what your street number is? Do you know what your phone number is? Oh, yeah, I've got that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they bend the rule and then this sort of thing happens. So, yes, Apple should not have done it. It's a horrible thing. They should have had better protections in place. Yes, this is a horrible thing. But at the end of all of this, social engineering is always going to be the greatest hack of all, and it will always occur. Always.
Right.
It's not something that can be stopped. It's happened for centuries. It will continue to happen for centuries. So,
and it doesn't matter what type of security you use. If the thing everyone's saying now is, oh, you have to start using Google's
two-factor authentication.
That, okay, great, but that won't fix what happened to Matt.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, you can have all the policies in place. Yeah, Dropbox is. is a great example. So I got the Dropbox hack that happened. Did we talk about this last time?
No.
So that they sent me my thing and, you know, they made me reset my password. And insulting in the email, they said, oh, and we recommend you should use a secure password and use something like 1Password. And I'm like, well, I freaking already do that. Why are you telling me this? This is so annoying. And you're making me reset my password. I said, was my account compromised? I sent their support an email and they said, no, we don't have any evidence that anybody was in your account. We're just doing this as a precautionary thing. And the genesis for that email going out from all the research I did was the fact that once again, an employee at Dropbox didn't have a secure password and his account was the place that got hacked and then exposed all this other information. So, you know, like they're not following their own policies, but at the end of the day, it's a human being picking a bad password. That's the problem. And that's never going to go away. Human beings are going to always pick bad passwords. You know, some might change because of this, but ultimately the hackers know this and you know, I don't know. I you can't go around panicking about all this stuff, but absolutely you should do as many security measures as you can to protect yourself. But I guess the end game that I want to say is never assume that it's never going to happen to you, but you can certainly mitigate and close down how far it got. So the biggest problem from a digital standpoint with this hack, as far as I understand it, is that the same information was used in multiple places. And that's where a technology like 1Password can really help you, where you don't have the same passwords on multiple accounts. You don't have accounts linked together. You want to keep everything siloed, and that will help you from a pure digital standpoint. But they still probably can get into one of your accounts. The question is, can they go further? And this is the same thing that happens with iOS or the Mac, too. It's why a lot of people don't run their Macs. They set up the admin account, right, which has all kinds of low Unix level access to a lot of things and can go into other accounts and do a lot of other things that a standard user account can't do.
Yeah.
It doesn't protect you necessarily from being hacked, but if you set up your main account as a user account and don't use the admin account, if they hack your user account, they're going to be siloed, right? There's only certain damage that they can do. So
right.
You can do damage mitigation, I think, with technology, but can you ultimately 100% protect yourself? Probably not, because at one point in the chain, there's human beings.
Well, yeah. And you also have to
there's meat puppets, and we're terrible.
Well, you talk about doing all these different security measures, like making sure you silo all of your stuff, make sure you don't use the same information everywhere.
Make sure you use a lock code on your iOS device.
Yeah.
So many people just don't have that.
I hate doing that because it's not convenient. But the thing is, the ultimate lesson for all of this stuff is there's a trade-off between convenience and security.
Yeah.
Like not running as an admin on your Mac. Well, maybe you're going to be doing a lot of admin-based things on your Mac, and you don't want to have to switch accounts to do those admin-based things.
You don't have to switch accounts, but you will be prompted for your password more frequently. You know, you'll have to enter your admin credentials.
Right.
That's where the inconvenience comes in. So you don't have to switch accounts generally for 99% of the
stuff.
Well,
yeah, But I mean, either way, it's more inconvenience, and honestly, I'm taking a risk with not putting a passcode on my iPhone. And I've said it before on this podcast that I don't put a passcode on my iPhone. When I do go to places like Macworld, or when I went to Six Flags yesterday, I put a password on there because there's a greater chance of me dropping it, someone very quickly picking it up. But otherwise, I'm relying on the fact that if I do lose my phone, I have enough buffer time where I feel I could remotely lock it. And that is a risk.
You know, that's like people saying, don't worry, I'll put my seatbelt on if there's going to be a crash.
Hey, you know what? I'm either going to be bitten or I won't.
Well, that's another valuable thing in this. And it even goes to the whole backup thing. I mean, this guy chose not to have backup for whatever reason, right? But that's his choice. And it's your choice not to have a passcode lock. The question is, are you smart enough, and you are, and I think he is, to know what the potential consequences are. Yeah. And you have to resolve that, yes, I'm okay with those consequences. So I'm perfectly fine with you not having a passcode lock, but if something happened and your data got all stolen and then you came on the podcast and complained about it, oh boy, I would rail on you.
Well, do you know what I'd be complaining about?
I think you would say, like I did with leaving my iPad on top of my car and not getting AppleCare Plus, well, that was really stupid.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. I would say that I'm stupid, and I can't believe that happened. Well, that sucks. So, yeah.
Right, exactly. We're not going to whine about it. So I only have a problem when someone makes that decision consciously and then tries to blame Apple or somebody else for that failure. And this guy's not doing that. You're not doing that. You know, I don't think that's happening here. So
yeah.
I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. You know, we make our choices we make our beds and we lie in them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right. So we have a lot more stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
But before we get to that, we have to talk about our sponsor for this week. And that's Apollon. They're coming back, doing another episode. Once again, their app is Pimp Your Screen. And it's actually been updated since we last talked about it. And that's why it's been a little while since we last talked about it. For those who don't remember, Pimp My Screen is a delightful little application that works for the iPad and the iPhone. We're going to focus on the iPhone one, but you know, it works almost exactly the same on the iPad as well. And there's actually a Mac app too. So the way this app works is it does that thing that you see on a lot of people's screens, where you see little shelves and little flourishes to the background on their screen. So you can do, they have, firstly, tons and tons of perfectly sized, high resolution backgrounds. And I'm actually looking through some of these, and some of these are really nice. They have a lot of nice textures. They have really nice landscapes. And they just a large assortment of different types of backgrounds. I'm looking through, I'm just scrolling. There are a lot of different categories here. And I believe they have a new background that they post every day.
Yeah, I don't know if they do daily, but for sure they update them very frequently, if not daily. I mean, they have new designs going up all the time.
Yeah, and it's not updated through the App Store. You don't have to download a new version. They just it's all through their web server, so you get new backgrounds on here.
Yeah.
Whenever you
and
open
they have in-house designers, so they're not just like, you know, images that they go grab and throw on there. They're original new images and new backgrounds and stuff like that that they design.
Yeah, that's actually one of the coolest things that they offer with this application. So they have they have shelves, they have icon skins, and one of the really cool things that they have in here, let me see here. They have the home screen maker, which is very cool. So you select a background that you want. So I'm just going to flip through it. I like this one. You can then, once you've found the background you like, and you can actually, so we're talking about all these backgrounds that they offer. You can also choose something from your camera roll, or you can take a new photo. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to use one of their things. So then you can use, you find an app. Ooh, that's cool. They have a, I'm looking at one that looks kind of like some Matrix code scrolling with app shelves. That's kind of neat. And then you can either choose a shelf design or you can choose a skin design. So the skin design kind of adds a little bit of an outline, a nice little flourish to your app icons. Or
yeah, they have all kinds of effects, like 3D effects, so you can make them look more like boxes, or you can make them look like they're glowing, or have drop shadows, or neon lights behind them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of different little apps. So basically, it puts a little border around each one of your app icons.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get more like 3D effects and stuff like that. So it really adds a lot of like depth. And the cool thing is you layer all this stuff on, and normally this would be something you can find sometimes online, stuff like this, where someone's gone in with Photoshop, right, and assembled all this and built just a JPEG background. What's great about the app is you do it right in the app on the fly and mix and match until you find the combination you like, and then you just hit the button and it saves it as your desktop.
Yeah, and you can
so
even
it renders it out and you're done.
Yeah, a really cool feature about this too is you can tap and get a little preview of what it's going to look like with icons on there, so you don't have to commit to it before you don't know if it's going to look cool or the way that you expect it's going to look before you actually save it out. So that's also a very good feature about this application. And like I said, there's a iPad version. You can also do a lock screen maker. So they do the same sort of deal. You choose a background and then you can also put a frame in there. And the frames, for the most part, are you can just add a little calendar, and there are a lot of different styles of calendar, and you have to update it every month.
Yeah, you just generate a new one every month, but I mean, it takes like 2 seconds with the app.
Exactly.
The other thing on the frames is you can have a different background sort of behind the slide to unlock and behind the clock. So
right.
You can put a little different effect or look behind those things as opposed to the main part of the lock screen when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like I said, there's also a Mac version, but this app is 99 cents. It's been on sale for a little while, so I don't know how long they're going to keep it on sale, but I recommend grabbing it while you still can.
I've just used it even just for, just for the plain desktops. They have some really nice ones, and for a buck, you know, it's a great deal, because you're going to spend a lot of time just searching around online to find those, and just to have them on the device and be able to flip through them.
Perfectly sized and high quality, and you're getting new ones all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check it out. It's called Pimp Your Screen, and it's by Apollon. So with that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
An app where we can pimp your screen. So you never know from day to day what's going to be on your iPhone screen. And we all get to control it.
Well, I know that if you're controlling it, Jeff, I know exactly what you would be pimping my screen with.
I think they have a randomizer, which you could, in effect, do that. You wouldn't be able to control it, Jeff, of course, but like...
That's true.
I think,
Michael, you'd need a bigger screen.
Don't quote me on that, though. I got to look now
randomizer.
That I shot off my big mouth.
Home screen maker. I'm not seeing... I don't see a randomizer. Popular? No, I don't see a randomizer.
Well, that would be cool. Maybe we need to talk to them and get them to add that feature.
Yeah. Maybe it's under more. Yeah, I'm not seeing it. Yeah, they need to get that. That'd be cool. All right, but yeah, it's called Pimp Your Screen. And Jeff, I'm pretty sure the ones that you'd just be putting boobs on my phone, right?
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. iOS 6. Some very interesting news came out about iOS 6 today that supports the...
No, it's not. We talked about this.
Well, it supports the taller iPhone rumors that have been
We talked about it in the opposite direction, but I think it's fair to assume that this works in reverse.
Okay, so what it is with the iOS simulator on your Mac, which developers have access to in order to test their apps before they actually deploy it to their devices. People have gotten in there and changed some settings and found that this resolution we assumed to be the resolution of the iPhone 5, this taller resolution, 1136 by 640, this seems to be a special resolution that works in the iPhone simulator to... It still shows the iPhone aspect ratio in the iPhone interface, whereas if you give it a different resolution other than the non-Retina and Retina iPhone resolutions, it would normally default to an iPad-style interface. So that's one interesting bit. The other is...
That is interesting. And that's new.
Yeah. The other is that if you are running iOS 5 in the simulator, it just kind of spaces out evenly the icons on your home screen. But if you switch over to the iOS 6 beta simulator, it actually adds another row of icons.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the rumored screenshots and things that we've seen, right?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, I'd say this is...
Vindication, validation.
Totally.
Confirmation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless Apple's doing some more internal testing on prototypes, trying to decide if they want to go down that path in the future. Just tossing that in there to mix it up for everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like almost like the sort of web thing. Like if you scale it enough, it would... add the extra row, but you're saying in this case it only adds the extra row if you're running iOS 6 in the simulator.
Yep.
Otherwise it does the space out thing, which is the thing that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, going the other way, Apple's always kind of scaled in this vertical direction the iOS interface by adjusting the spacing between the icons to make room for, say, like the call in progress bar. Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is like double height, right? So the app icons just tighten up with space, and it kind of makes room for it.
Yeah, and I haven't actually checked out anything further, anything outside of...
but, yeah. But that effect is the validation, in my mind, of why Apple could go to a taller screen that's not wider and not break a lot of apps. Like, a lot of app developers aren't going to have to recode their apps because if they're using... And we talked about this, the native UI elements that are in iOS, things like, say, you have a list view or, you know, of data, just the line spacing will just space out a little bit more in your app to compensate for the taller screen, which I think is kind of what we're seeing in the iOS 5 screenshot here, right? The space between the icons just sort of widens. It looks a little odd, but it's still okay. Right? But they didn't have to scale up and make bigger icons to kind of fit the space.
Right, yeah. And now I haven't tried it in... I haven't personally tried it because I haven't downloaded the... excuse me. Not as bad as Jeff.
Not even close.
I haven't tried the iOS 6 version yet to poke around because I know there are quite a few new applications available in the simulator that you can play with to see how the apps respond. But I'm guessing it's very similar to what we're expecting. So, let's see. What else do we have? Very interesting. Apple in iOS Beta 4, which was recently released, removed the YouTube application. And according to a statement that that they sent out, they said
Who's they?
Apple. Apple sent the statement.
They commented on this?
They actually did, yeah. They sent a statement to...
Wow.
I'm trying to look where that was. On The Verge.
You don't comment on unreleased products.
Yeah, The Verge reports that Apple has issued a statement acknowledging the removal, saying, our license to include the YouTube app in iOS has ended. Customers can use YouTube and Safari in the Safari browser, or and Google is working on a new YouTube app to be on the App Store. And then Peter Kafka from All Things D received a statement from YouTube saying that they're working with Apple to make sure they have the best possible YouTube experience for iOS users.
Better than the one that Apple delivered, which was basically crap and didn't work.
You know, it's like you read my mind, Adam.
Now, see, I
totally get why we had that app, because at the time we needed something that could be the bridge between no flash content and being able to watch videos, YouTube videos on the iPhone. And we're pretty much totally beyond that now. But we don't really need Apple's native YouTube app. So why not have something that actually gives us the features that you can get through the website?
Yeah.
Does the Google app not have like a little YouTube? Oh, it does. It has like a little YouTube web interface window thing, right? Which just basically presents YouTube inside the Google app.
Oh, in the Google app?
Yeah, which just feels like a YouTube app anyway. So
I haven't.
What's the big diff?
I don't know.
I mean, I've just used that. If I want to watch a YouTube video, I just launch the Google app and go to apps and click on YouTube.
So is that just the website, though?
Yeah, it's just a Safari frame, you know, in the app. It looks like an app. It acts like an app.
Mm-hmm.
It has my favorites. It has the ability to look at subscriptions.
How do I get to the mobile version of... Oh, here we go. It's down at the bottom. I'm on the desktop version on my iPhone for some reason.
So?
Yeah.
I don't know. In the on the web tab of the apps icon in the Google app. So, and the lo and behold, the videos actually play.
Yeah.
Unlike Apple's app, which you just sit there and stare at the thing spinning.
Really? I don't really have that problem.
Oh, it's never worked for me,
the
YouTube app.
I forgot that I turned on two-factor authentication for my for my Google.
Awesome. And now you're kind of screwed because you can't remember.
Because now I got to get it. Because it's got to text me every time I
want to log into something.
Yeah.
Is that how it works? It sends you like a code number?
Yeah, a six-digit code that I have
temporary
to
temporary code number.
Yeah, but once you do that and you say trust this computer, then it doesn't do that. It just asks for your password. Okay, so there's that. What else was there? They have a new Wi-Fi plus cellular setting, so that if your Wi-Fi setting is slower than Wi-Fi connection is slower than 3G, they will automatically use 3G, which is neat. There's some privacy settings for Bluetooth sharing, which I didn't realize you could do anything over Bluetooth with your iPhone other than audio and tethering.
Really? And Bluetooth has always had the ability to transfer files. It just never usually disabled or doesn't work properly.
Yeah, I know that, but I didn't think there was any capability in iOS to do that. Yeah, whatever.
So is that new in iOS 6?
The security thing? The privacy? I'm talking about there's a privacy section in settings now for the Bluetooth sharing to help monitor.
For Bluetooth. Privacy. Yeah. I missed that part. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm dense.
It's okay. Passbook has an App Store button, so you can get passbook apps, I presume. So there's that. Now, I don't think we've talked about the most recent iPhone 5 case leaks. So to recap, what it looks like most of these cases, these enclosures seem to have are the back. Well, the front looks essentially the same. It's taller. The bezel at the top and the bottom, the thickness of those are shorter on the top and the bottom of the screen. And I believe the thickness between the edge of the device and the screen on either side is also thinner. And you've got the smaller dock connector at the bottom. Speaker and microphone are slightly bigger. And you also have your headphone connector at the bottom of the device, which is a nice change because I think most people put their phone in their pocket with the with what would normally be the headphone jack face down or pointed down. So this way you don't have to change your orientation that you'd normally put it in your pocket when you're wearing headphones. And then the back of the device. Oh, and I forgot that the FaceTime camera is now centered right above the earpiece on the front. But the back of the device has two glass sections, very very short, one at the bottom and one at the top, and then in the center is metal. Right?
Lame. I really hope this isn't the back design.
It does. It looks weird. It looks really weird.
It looks bizarre.
Yeah.
It looks worse than the original iPhone, and at least they had. I mean, maybe they're doing it for radio transparency. I don't know, which was, you know, why the original iPhone had the sort of little black plastic piece at the bottom.
Well, then I feel like
haven't we solved that problem by now?
They either need to have it all the same material on the back. Mm-hmm. They either need to have it all glass or all metal.
It should be all metal. I mean, how do they solve that problem with the iPad?
They have a little window. They have the antenna window.
No, the whole front's glass.
Front? Yeah.
No, on the back I'm talking. But okay, so for Wi-Fi, the antenna is, there's an antenna window in the Apple logo on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the front. On the bezel.
I don't know. Apple always does these gorgeous seamless designs, and I just don't get why they would do this.
How much time around it's
unnecessarily cluttered.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like it.
How much
I'm gonna
do
buy
you
it anyway, just for the record, but yeah. I don't like it.
I still feel like it needs to be a little bit wider.
But no.
Not even a little touch wider?
No.
No.
All right, whatever.
For what purpose?
Because it seems like
it's space the icons wider,
overly tall.
I mean,
tall.
Unless they're going to make it a full icon width wider, what's the point?
Because it's just so tall. It's gawky. It's like a tall,
lanky,
skinny guy, lanky.
All right. Picture that same iPhone with a taller screen, but wider. Can you reach all the corners with your thumb when you're holding the iPhone in one hand?
Yes, I have long thumbs.
All right, so I need
a
small screen.
You weren't a freak.
Yeah. So normal people, Adam.
Yes. I think you guys are crazy.
Probably not very comfortably, and I'm probably going to hand cramp.
You guys are freaking crazy.
I already don't. Okay, but I do buy the argument, like, how many people legitimately use their iPhone consistently in one hand? I don't. I'm often cradling it in one hand and sort of pawing at it with my index finger, as opposed to holding it in one hand and trying to just navigate around with my thumb. My preferred sort of method of interacting with it is to palm it in one hand, and which is why the antenna gate happened, I think, so profoundly.
Because of all these palmy guys.
Yeah. I don't know. I buy what you're saying, but I don't know that that would stop Apple from making a wider phone. I think it's more about just, it's not going to fit in your pocket as easily. And I keep mine in my front pocket. And Steve always claimed to have kept his in his front jean pocket. So yeah. I don't know.
Which is where mine goes to.
I'm not saying much wider, guys. I'm just saying a little bit wider. So it's,
but then what's the point? I mean, Apple's not just going to make it wider just to make it a little bit wider.
I mean, to make it look nicer. If it looks too,
it causes problems for.
No, it doesn't.
Yes.
No, no, no. So you make it a little bit wider to make it look a little better because it's so tall.
No, they've gone widescreen.
I know.
16:9 for video. We've made this argument already, right?
I understand that. You can do a lot.
What it comes down to, Michael, is Adam and I are right and you're wrong.
Okay. Yep. You can do a lot of interesting things with your aspect ratio and your screen size, and you'll still get that.
You
wide.
Do that, and you now old. Well, I guess with the change in the dock connector, never mind.
And pixel density.
You can't have a simple adapter to adapt to old dock connectors. You got to have some funky weird thing that, like, is one of those, you know, like pipe couplers that goes from wide to narrow.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Anyway, so that's what the new... Okay, so my favorite change that they have here with the new one, and I let me just add as an aside, the white version with this metal interstitial area looks even stranger. Even
dumber.
Yeah. Is it white? It seems like it might be a little bit white.
I don't know. It's funny. I've seen some of those images where, it, you know, depending upon the angle, it looks like a continuous back. So I guess I have to reserve judgment till we see the actual material in the flesh and not some weird 3D rendering or not some poorly taken photograph. Maybe yeah. It won't look as dumb as it looks in some of the photos, but
maybe
I don't
it won't
hold
be
much
as
hope.
Dumb.
Yeah, I'm not holding much hope either, but... Then again, when we got the slab style iPhone that we have today, the photos that leaked of that ahead of time, I looked at it and went, wow, that's ugly. What a piece of crap.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, okay. So it comes down to how much do you want to bet we're all going to say, oh, this is just amazingly gorgeous when we actually get it.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised when the iPhone 4 rolled out and it had the whole flat slab thing and of course, I bought one. I have my iPhone 4S. And I'm such a junkie.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah, I'm going to get the white one, though. I think it'll look okay.
You
it
always
is, it
go seems, with the white.
I didn't get the white iPhone this last time because I couldn't, although I hacked it to be that way. What else do we have here? Oh, more talk about the new dock connector. There's a lot of we got a new photo of it seems to be a even smaller opening than we initially thought. Someone got a hold of several more pieces, and there's a little outline, a little metal ring around the inner part of that connector, and. People are speculating that it might be magnetic. So we might have a MagSafe style connector.
That seems logical to me.
And that's what they were predicting for the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S. Just saying.
Not so much for the, I tripped over my cord type thing, just for an ease of use. Because an iPhone would have to weigh a substantial amount to actually not just, even if it is magnetic with the current MagSafe, it would... I mean, magnets are strong, guys. But at the same time, I mean, you can weaken whatever magnetic material you get, but... Or just get a weaker material. but at the same time, if it's weaker, at a certain point, you're going to have it just falling out. And there is that issue with the Retina MacBook where a lot of people are having that connector just pop right out. So it's either going to be something for a safety where you trip over it and it pops out, or it's just going to be a simple, this is a very easy connector to plug in. You just bring it up and it sucks it right up and then it's plugged in. And they're also talking about how we may be able to flip it either way, which is one of those irritating issues we have right now with the current 30-pin connector where it has to be oriented the proper way for it to actually work. And I like that idea because I plug my iPhone all the time in my car, and it is a slight, I'm talking slight, but still, it's a bit of a hassle. There's room for improvement on it. If I could just move the connector up to the bottom of the iPhone and it snaps in place, that'd be pretty cool.
So,
all right,
if it
so
go,
with all the... Go ahead, Adam.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
All right. So with all the data and power stuff that needs to transfer through this cable, and we have 9 pins, are there enough pins to have this as a reversible cable?
I'd probably.
No.
No,
no, that's what I was going to bring up. So here's the thing on the 9 pin. Do you guys know what the 30 pins do right now?
They do a lot of different things.
But do you know why 19 seems plausible and 9 doesn't?
No.
Okay. So about 8 or 9 pins on the current 30-pin connector are dedicated to FireWire. Well, we don't need that, right?
Yeah.
Boom. Gone. A couple others are dedicated to S-Video. Don't need those. Gone. So there's like a pair of those, and I think there's a composite video out, so that's a third one. Gone, 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 gone. We don't need any of that. So that gets us down to that like 19. You can easily eliminate 11 pins and not lose any functionality from the current 30-pin cable. If we go much smaller, what seems logical to get lost would be left and right audio in, which means, guess what? No USB adapter on future iPads to bring in USB mics, which I'd be a little bit bummed about.
Yeah, but if
not,
it's
being able to do USB mics would actually suck.
Yeah, but if it's a digital interface where that can be translated to an adapter, that wouldn't be a problem.
Mm. If you look at the pinouts for the 30 pins, I can see how we can easily eliminate 11. After that, it seems like we're going to be losing some kind of functionality that I'm not going to be happy with. So I don't even care about the adapter thing, but if they're going to start taking away kind of some of the functionality, I don't know. Maybe they can do some creative stuff with where the power and ground is. But you've got like USB ground and other kinds of ground. I don't know. It'd be interesting. For sure, I found it interesting that like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 pins are like FireWire pins. So we definitely don't need those.
Yeah, wow. One of the interesting things about the new design that I really like is that the front and the back panels are sunken in. They're part of the metal ring around the phone. They're flush.
As opposed to being kind of raised up.
Exactly.
Like
so that model. I'm guessing that's one of the big things that'll make this thing thinner.
Probably the only thing.
Well, they have also thinner display.
Well, isn't that how they get it down tucked inside?
That's what I would assume.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So, yeah. Good stuff. Do you guys see the photo of what looks like a rear shell of an iPad mini?
Yeah.
It doesn't have a camera.
Which seems plausible.
Totally. I'd say logical. Makes sense. I mean, Apple has shown in many times before with mini versions of devices that they typically remove some of the features of the larger, more quote-unquote pro-type devices. To differentiate,
they should go
them.
The other way, though. For pity's sake, if they're going to eliminate the camera on the big one because that looks stupid.
Yeah,
with a smaller iPad, you won't look so dorky.
That's true. That's true.
I fully admit I've taken photos with my iPad, but I also fully admit that I look dorky doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to point out when I'm at Disney World next week. While I will have my iPad on the trip, I will not be taking photos with it.
Will you be even taking it into the park?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's craziness.
But I did see that at Disneyland.
You'd see some people. Oh, yeah. You
a few
that.
People taking yeah. photos with their iPad.
You heard yeah. that Eddie Q worked to convince Steve Jobs of the need for a 7-inch iPad. And at some point, he decided that he
got fired.
Agreed.
No, he's still there.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
But that Steve Jobs eventually agreed.
Because he does that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not surprising to me. A lot of people say, whoa, Steve Jobs said no, and that means that no, and then he just lies. Well, no, it's not that
People don't pay attention to what he says and what he does.
I know. It's misdirection and changing of opinion. And
Tim Cook said it was one of his most admired traits of Steve Jobs was his ability to instantly flip his opinion and then convince you mere seconds later that he never had the prior opinion. It's just like an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't admit he's wrong. He just changes his opinion and then convinces you that he was right with the
All
other
along.
Opinion. Yeah. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's a superpower right there.
Yeah, definitely. So, did you guys hear about that iMore has reported, They believe the next generation iPhone, the iPod Nano, and the new iPad Mini will be announced September 12th.
How about if I give a partial agreement?
Okay.
I don't see Apple doing the iPhone and a new iPad line in the same event, and then tossing the iPod Nano in on top of it. I can see those as separate events. And, there you go.
Yeah.
But I do think we will see a September 12th event, and it will probably be the new iPhone.
Do you think it'll be iPhone and iPod, or just completely devoted to iPhone?
I could accept iPhone and Nano in the same event more than new iPad and anything else in the same event.
Oh, yeah. Are we expecting there'll be a new iPod Touch, though, too?
I would assume so. With a new iPhone, we'd probably see a new iPod Touch.
Yeah. I do. I think you're right. I think you probably separate the iPad event. So, yeah. I would see iPhone, iPod Nano, and potentially iPod Touch. Because you could lead with the two iPods and then finish off with the iPhone.
Right.
It would make for a pretty good event. And then boom, a month later, you get another nice spike and a hit in holiday sales when you announce the mini iPad. I just worry that it might be, it wouldn't be too late. If you can do it maybe 2 weeks, you think they'd be like about 2 weeks apart, probably? So
probably.
End of September or mid-September, I guess, if it's the 12th, and then right early October.
Right. That seems like a reasonable time frame to me.
Yeah, I would buy that. I still, though, don't put it past Apple just to F with us and do them all in one huge event that's like an hour and 45, 2 hours long. And then I've got to scramble and work my butt off to decipher it all.
You know, if they could keep it compelling the whole way through, sure. But
doing it more and more, these big marathon keynotes or announcements or whatever we're calling them.
Well, mm-hmm. considering the flack that was it HP that did the event? Yeah, it was HP when they were going to introduce all their new tablets, and partway through the event the live streams changed from and now they're saying this, now they're saying this to snarky comments like please send food, we're going to die. Apple sees stuff like that, and they're going to do what they can to avoid having the media sit in at an event and start talking about we're going to have to eat each other.
Yeah, remember that one keynote where it was just like app developers? And I think it was even a WWDC, so it was somewhat appropriate, but it just drug on and on and on with like demos of apps.
Yeah, I think that was a couple years ago.
And after that, they didn't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with what you're saying, Jeff. So they sort of pay attention to, that wasn't maybe such a good idea to right in the middle, start off talking about all these great products and stuff like that, and then right in the middle have at 45 minutes of app demos.
Yeah. Speaking of dragging on and on.
This show?
Well, let's not make that happen on this show. Let's not let that happen here. We should get on to our iDevice picks, shall we? Unless you guys have anything else to talk about.
Is there anything else exciting? What do you got on your list? That's it?
For me, that's it.
I can't think of anything.
All right.
Well, there you go.
Jeff, do you have one? iDevice pick?
I do.
All right.
And, okay, so my iDevice pick is a service called GeoLoki. And the service, it's almost like a proof of concept because it's designed to be able to be integrated into other apps. But the gist of it is this service lets you tag where you currently are, then tell other people, here's where I am, and I'm on the way to where you are, and then they can follow along in real time and see where you are. And then and it's set up with links that expire. So after like an hour or whatever, the link that they can use to follow you dies. So they can't follow you indefinitely. And so what they have right now is the service set up so that you can use it and try it out. And I've had friends use this with me so that I know exactly where they are on the way to a meeting. And it's really, really cool. And when it will become even cooler is when we start seeing developers really integrate this into their apps. So they have an iOS SDK and an Android SDK. And that's important that they have both so that if you have friends that choose to use Android phones instead of iOS phones, you can still use the service with each other.
So what is it called?
GeoLoki.
How do you spell it?
GeoLoki.
QI. That's why I couldn't find it. It's a little dino?
No, it's like a little orange square with a little location tag in the middle of it.
Map attack? No.
No.
Hang on.
Now, if you look in our private chat room, you'll see a link.
Is this a website?
It's a website, but they also have an app.
Huh. I couldn't find the app.
Well, maybe it's a web app.
Oh, no, it is the little dino. The little blue dino.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, there's a little blue dino.
Oh, well, sorry about that. Apparently, I haven't paid attention to what the app icon is.
It's cool.
Oops.
Awesome. So does this work only with the app, or can someone check out your progress on a website?
The link that you get sent actually goes through a website, so you don't have to have the app to track where someone is.
So I can send this to my mom when I tell her I'm coming for dinner or something.
Right. And then she taps the link and then Mobile Safari opens up and she can track from there.
And it's free.
And it's free.
Cool. I should give it a try.
Yes, you should.
Now I'll send a message saying that I'm going to your house and you'll watch the progress.
For a really long time.
Yeah. Maybe I can jump in the air, and if I just hover there, I'll wait for the planet to turn under me.
I think that sounds awesome.
It does. It sounds like a superpower.
A very cool superpower.
Yeah.
But one that requires a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm. Hey, not too much. Oh, cool. GarageBand stopped recording because the disc is too slow.
Uh-oh.
It's going again. Anyway. So GeoLoki, it's free, and that's Jeff's pick. Adam, what's your pick this week?
My pick is going to be Uber. You guys know about Uber?
Nope.
All right. So Uber is a car service, and I'm trying to get the cities that they're in right now. But this is awesome. It actually came up when Comic-Con was going on, and I was hanging out with Rod Roddenberry, he was doing an event. I got to see his movie, which is awesome, by the way. Did we pick his movie at one point?
What's it called?
His documentary.
I don't think we
Trek did. Nation. I believe it's on iTunes now, so this will be the sub pick. So go on iTunes. Rod Roddenberry did a documentary about his quest to find out about his father through the fans of Star Trek. And it's an amazing documentary. He interviewed a bunch of not just the fans, but the fans and the people who worked on the Star Trek series and stuff like that. I mean, you have to remember, you know, here's a kid and he's growing up and his dad is just like all of us. He goes to work, right? And he comes home and you don't really realize it's just dad. So to him, it's just dad, not this iconic figure. And it wasn't until later in life he sort of discovers, you know, or realizes that the kind of impact his dad had. And so he goes on this quest and he built this documentary to kind of discover his dad through his work and the people that worked with him and the people whose lives he touched and stuff like that. And so it's a really great documentary. And I think it aired on the Science Channel and it's now available, I think, through all of the digital outlets. I'm fairly certain it's on iTunes now. You can rent it or watch it. Might be on Netflix. I haven't checked yet, but definitely do that. But anyway, so we had gone, they were doing a screening during Comic-Con and then we were heading downtown and we needed to get down there. And he told me about this service, Uber, and it's advertised as everyone's private driver and they have an app and it's a little bit more expensive than it would be for hailing, you know, like getting a cab. But what you're paying for is really the convenience of the whole process. So you get the app and for the cities that it's working in, San Diego is one of those. I think San Francisco, the list I'm sure is on the website. But you pull up the app and it uses geolocation to find you and then show you drivers who have town cars and SUVs and nicer vehicles that are near you. And you can then request a pickup and you get information about the driver, including a photo. It tells you how many minutes away they are, when they'll be there. And you can see them on the map, you know, as they move towards you. So you know when they're going to arrive to pick you up. And you also get a push notification when they're close by. And you do all of the credit card transaction and everything through registering through the app. So you get in the car. They drive you where you need to go. The tip is taken care of. The fare is taken care of. You literally just get in the car. They take you there. You say thank you. You get out. It's all handled by the app. And then you can rate the different drivers and you can see ratings on drivers and stuff like that. But then more importantly, drivers also get to rate passengers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So they can say, this guy's a total jerk. Don't pick him up.
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, they're just really nice cars. Like I said, it's a little bit more expensive, but it really wasn't that much more expensive. It was probably $5 more expensive for the whole trip. And that's including the tip. So, like, the tip's included, so you don't have to deal with that hassle. You don't have figure that stuff out. You literally just request the car. It picks you up, takes you where you want to go. You get out. You're done.
So, and it's all paid for with the app.
All handled by the app.
Very nice. It's called Uber.
Yeah. Uber.
U-B-E-R.
Yeah, I'll try and, as you're doing your pick, I'll try and find the cities because I'm sure people are going to want to know that, and I just couldn't remember. I just know that when I go for Macworld, I am so using this.
And I will so be riding with you in that damn car.
Yeah, and I think you can, for the one price, you get up to 4 passengers, and then if you have more than that, there's a little bit more of a charge, but that all the information's up on the website. So right now it looks like they're in Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Denver.
Ooh.
Yeah. London, Los Angeles, New York, Paris, Philadelphia, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, Toronto, Vancouver, Washington, the Hamptons, and at DNC 2012. I don't know what DNC 2012 is. It must be a conference. Sounds Washington, like D.C. Did I say that?
Democratic National Convention.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense. And New York, of course, and Paris. So for our international people. And every driver I had picked me up, I used the service 3 times during Comic-Con, and it was fabulous. And the drivers were all great. The cars were immaculate. And like I said, I really didn't feel I was paying that much more than I would have had I ordered a cab. And the experience was so much better just beginning to end that I think it was worth the little bit of markup that you're going to pay. Yeah. But you know, your mileage may vary, and I'm sure the rates vary from city to city. So you probably want to go to the website uber.com and just get the details. But overall, I thought it was great.
Cool. All right. So my pick this week, I'm going to do a double pick. Well, I'm going to do a tip and I'm going to do a pick. The pick that I have is it's a website and an app. And the app is really important for the website because you get a little extra feature out of it. But the site's called Just Wink. I don't know if you guys have heard of them. They do greeting cards.
I think I have heard of that site.
And I'm not a card guy at all. I think they're all stupid, and when people give me cards, I typically throw them away because I don't care about them. I mean, there are a couple of that I keep around because they're nice, but I'm not heartless. But I'm not a big card guy. But then I saw actually one of the cards on Tumblr. It was a really funny card. And so I sought it out and I found the website where it came from. And it's very creative, very artistic, very modern stuff, cards that I can deal with. There was the birthday card that I saw that inspired me to go to this was, it said, somebody mentioned that this might be the day, that you, came out of someone's vagina. And then they said, good for you or something like that.
And then you send it to someone that was born via C-section and
yeah, then it's awkward. But, there's a lot of stuff like this. There's a lot of funny stuff. There's a lot of stuff on here that as I was picking through the selection, I thought that it was just overly cute and really touched me. And again, I'm not big into greeting cards. So there's one, I'm glad it's your birthday, and there's two ice cream cones and one's licking the other and it says any excuse to kiss you. Just adorable. There's other stuff that's not so adorable. There's some manly stuff. I sent a manly card to my brother on his birthday about something about a stripper popping out of a cake or something like that. And so the cool thing about this app and this website is you find the card you want. They have a lot of stuff and they're adding more and more all the time. And you can personalize it. You can add a photo. You can actually sign it with your finger on your iPhone, or you can sign it with your mouse on your computer. And then you can send it to them via email or via text message or via Facebook. Or if you do it on your iPhone, and I'm not sure why they're limiting it to just iPhones, but you can actually send a real printed card to somebody that's totally personalized. And that's what I did for my brother, and I thought it was pretty cool. If you do it on your iPhone only. So it's Just Wink. You got to get the Just Wink app. And it's one of those things where sometimes I don't have enough time to fully get a hold of someone and remember when their birthday is. I see someone when their birthday is coming up a couple days in advance. I say, oh, I'm going to send them a card. And I feel like it's even cooler than just sending them a birthday text. So check it out. It's free. And most of the cards, if you send them via electronically, that's free too. So now my tip is one that's just totally changed my life on iOS the last couple months, and actually on my Mac too. So I have Text Expander on my Mac, but in on iOS. You don't have Global Text Expander. You don't have something where you type a little text shortcut and then it expands to something that has a substantial amount of text. But what you do have it under Settings, General, Keyboard, toward the bottom is a section called Shortcuts, and we've talked about this. This shortcut that has changed my life is I threw my email address in here as a shortcut. I just type email as my shortcut, and then it expands my whole email address. And this works just, I use it constantly for logging into things, for sending people my email address. I used my iPad, I think, right after it was restored, or I used my Mac when it didn't have this on it, and I had it on most of my other devices, and I feel like it's just, I'm wasting so much time without having this shortcut. So you should definitely try doing that, adding your email address as a shortcut in iOS. And if you have Text Expander, do it on your computer as well, because I don't think you probably realize how often you type your email address into a web form, and it'll just save you so much time. Have you guys done that?
I can't imagine using a computer without Text Expander.
But do you have one do you have a shortcut for your email address?
Oh yeah. My email address, all of my contact info.
Oh yeah.
For like common things that I need to tell people. Yep.
Yeah, Text Expander is one of those things I can't use my Mac without. But have you tried the email thing on your the keyboard shortcuts on your iDevices?
No, but that's because having to have shortcuts across two systems, meaning Text Expander and Apple's, just really kind of annoys me. So
yeah.
I ignore Apple's system, even though it's system-wide.
Yep, me too.
You guys should seriously try just adding your, like, MacCast at Gmail and your whatever email address you use most of the time, Jeff.
Well, that'll be all solved with iOS 6, right? When we have signatures per account and all that fun stuff.
Well, that'll be nice.
Well, I mean, still, if you're logging into Gmail or you're logging into one of your, like your Twitter account where you...
Who? I don't do that. Gmail?
Okay, not Gmail. Okay, come on. I'm giving you examples of things.
I'm with you. I'm with
you. You know what I'm talking about. You're always typing your email address to log into things. So it's really just give it a try. It's pretty cool. So that's. I think Dave actually passed that tip along in one of the episodes of the Geek Gab.
I use 1Password.
Yeah, I use 1Password too. We've already been over this. You can check out all the show notes and the pics at wehavecommunicators.com. You can leave a review in iTunes. We appreciate those. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address where you can send questions or comments or tips, that sort of stuff. If you have a cool tip you want to send, I'd love that. I'd play that on the show. If you can send in an audio comment using the Voice Memo app on your iPhone and email that in. Or you can even call 202-642-6667, and if you have a cool tip, we'll totally play that on the show. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, and of course, don't forget, check out Pimp Your Screen by Apollon. It's 99 cents. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer. That's macobserver.com. He's also at jgamet on Twitter, and zazzle.com/jgamet is his Zazzle store, and that's where you can get the We Have Communicators mug that's been designed by Jeff,
and everything tastes awesome in that mug.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I drink out of it quite frequently.
Yeah. As do I.
I did on the latest. So I'm once a month a guest on a UK Mac show called The Mac Show on the British Tech Network.
Cool.
And it's a video thing. I was drinking out of that mug this whole last video episode. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Adam Christensen is at the MacCast. It's MacCast.com. He's at MacCast on Twitter, and member.matcast.com is the member version of the MacCast.
Yep. And every once in a while, too, on Mac Roundtable. That's still going on. I always forget to plug that one. MacRoundtable.com. Bunch of Mac podcasters on that. Jeff, mm-hmm. you're on there. Have you been on there from time to time?
No, I have.
Yes. Yeah. So check us out over there, too.
Cool. I'm at Michael Johnson on Twitter, and also at Little Reviews. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.